It is the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show. It's 11:05. We had Ray from the Joe Dolan 15th anniversary show. Well, it's 16th, nearly 17th anniversary now at this stage. Ray sang Bonjour Mademoiselle for us just before the news. A wonderful performance by Ray there. And Nora online says that was absolutely fantastic. Also want to say a very good morning to Paul McGuire and Anita Kelly, who are listening to us. Anita in the Cayman Islands. Anita, a very good morning to you. I had a wonderful day on the Cayman Islands, kissing stingrays and doing all sorts of diving and snorkeling many, many years ago. Lovely spot, love it. And also want to just say good morning to Paul. And Letterkenny Memories starts back tonight at the Station House in Letterkenny at 8 o'clock. Everybody is welcome. It's always a lovely night, actually, Letterkenny Memories. So if you ever get a chance to do Letterkenny Memories, do take that chance because it is a really good night. Now, it's just gone 11 on a Monday morning, and that means it's time to say good morning to Brendan Devenny, and Brendan joins us on Zoom. Brendan, good morning to you.
Good morning to all.
As always, a busy weekend in GAA in Donegal, Brendan, and I'm sure you were out and about at various matches, talking to various people.
Yeah, that's it. Those coming thick and fast. Now we had loads of championship games, pre-quarterfinals, relegation playoffs. We had everything was happening. Yeah, title was won as well in the ladies. Intermediate, Leave Mora beating Killybegs in that competition. So, yeah, plenty to discuss.
Probably the big headline from the weekend is we now have the quarter-final lineup for the Senior Football Championship in the county. They have Connell take on Kilcar, Ardragh taking on Gwydor, Éirua take on Unions, Glen Swilly take on Sean McCool's. Some very tasty clashes to come there. Ardragh Gwydor sounds like a very interesting one.
Certainly, yeah. A lot of people maybe would have tipped Clochaneady to beat Ardragh, but there's something about Damien Devenny playing his side there. You have to say fair play to them. They pulled out a big result because Clochaneady looked like they were getting better and better as the season went on. But yeah, a lot of people would have said for years, though, it didn't really get down to crunch time to quarter final time. But we did mix up. They changed up the way the championship format was laid out. It certainly has made it more interesting with you don't have groups where the last game in particular might be irrelevant to some of the sides. So listen, the championship was certainly had a bit more life in it this year, but certainly now when you're down to the last eight, you look at any of them games and you think anybody can beat anybody in them. But I suppose the big one, Dave Connell against Kilcar, is the standout tie. Massive game that is between two certainly. Every year they're championship contenders.
Well, it's been the final more than once in recent years, hasn't it, Niamh Connell Kilcar?
Yeah, and of course the famous panel shootout as well. And yeah, there's always a lot around these games. And Kilcar have been moving along nicely. Donal, there's been certainly a big talk about St. Unions and Niamh Connell being a bit ahead of the rest, with the likes of Kilcar and the chasing pack along with the likes of Glen Swilly, Gidoor in particular, putting their hands up to join that. And of course, Éirua has been the, I wouldn't say the surprise package of the season, but they've certainly put themselves back in that footing where they're also a Commonwealth Championship contender. They had a brilliant round of group games, winning all their matches and beating Gidoor in that as well, which was a massive scalp for them. So they're coming in now against what many people find as the championship favourites, St. Unions. So how they play the game, they've been playing it very defensive and they've been it's been working for them, playing a bit like what Niamh Connell would play. So it would be interesting to see if St. Unions have enough skill and guile to break down that defensive system. But yeah, I think every game in that set of fixtures has something in it. And if you look at it, go down to a semi. Finally, if the likes of Glen Swilly and Gidoor were to get through, if you're looking at the likes of Dave Connell, Kilcar, St. Unions after that, I think that any of those teams will fancy themselves certainly. So we have great quarterfinals and it's going to be very interesting semis after that as well.
Absolutely. In terms of the programme tonight, you're going to have Brendan Kilcoyne and John Gilday with you. They'll be looking at all the games and no doubt discussing these forthcoming matches in detail. I beg your pardon. Also, an interesting one, Enda McGinley coming on to speak to you tonight, Brendan, and that's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, always great to talk to Enda. He's a good friend of mine. You hear him there in the Sunday game a lot, his views are highly sought after, so it's good to have him in the DL debate. The Tyrone Championship, of course, kicking off this weekend past there, and theirs is knockout done. So the only championship I know that certainly in Ulster, and I'm not sure about the rest of the country, that's straight knockout. So it's all or nothing. So it certainly adds to a lot of fireworks in their championship in there. So very interesting stuff. And huge, look at the management teams around there. You know, most of those top clubs in Tyrone now have close to county managements in there. So massive, massive interest in their championship. And of course, a small matter of Enda's own club mate and former boss Mickey Hart, you know, and his
Has Mickey been in the news recently?
Yeah, small bit of news.
Oh, there's the thing, right?
But you know what? It's always interesting to get. I mean, somebody like Enda that obviously, you know, lives beside Mickey and would know him better than most. Just the mindset of it, though. I mean, there's news that drops now and then, but the like of that news is just phenomenal. It'll be interesting to see from a Tyrone perspective, and even seen a few people rounded up about the way different parts of Tyrone where they would have their I suppose their big rivalries. You know, we automatically see Tyrone and Derry as this rivalry, but there was a Tyrone guy, I seen an article last week saying, depending where you live in Tyrone, more your border inside to where Mickey is, he mightn't have that real deep rivalry Derry that we assume with some of the other parts of Tyrone. So it was an interesting take on it, but whatever it is, not news I was expecting to hear now, especially when someone has done 18 years at the helm and won three All-Irelands, and as Mr. Tyrone taking over one of your big rivals. So listen, it'd be interesting. I would say that'd be a sellout, that league fixture this season in Division 1. Very interesting stuff. Don't
I think the first I heard of it was
the intermediates at semi-final level just as well, turning down and span at Malm. We had playoffs as well. In the Championship 2, so it's down to St. Noel's and Milford fighting out to stay in division, to stay in the Senior Championship. So that'll all be discussed tonight. But as you say, a lot of stuff to wrap up between Donegal and the look across their neighbours in Tyrone.
And the programme, DL Debate, on after the 7 o'clock news in association with Sarah's Kitchen.
That's it. Sister Sarah's keeps us going.
Brendan, it's going to be a great show as always. Thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. Brendan Kilcoyle and John Gilday, Enda McGinley. I mean, three heavy hitters, and I'm sure between the four of you, there'll be plenty of talk over the course of that programme.
You know, Donald, the clock runs down quick. You think
it runs very quick.
You'd be well aware of this.
Oh, no doubt at all.
It was like the Joe Dolan song coming in at the end there. There's always something the clock is working against you. But yeah, looking forward to tonight.
And there'll always be a second verse you don't anticipate. Brendan, thanks here, gentlemen. Thank you. Cheers. That's Brendan Devaney there. And the DL Debate, of course, on after the 7 o'clock news tonight. And it'll also be podcast on highlandradio.com as well. Now, we're going to take a break in just a moment. Before we do, though, just a few of your comments, because we were discussing air quality and issues pertaining to it before the break with Patrick there. And Patrick was saying that he would like people to, even if they do have a fire that they're using smokeless coal on, that if you have alternative sources, be it oil, be it gas, whatever, to use those instead of the fire and the range. Now, as you might expect, there's been a bit of a kickback from the people of Donegal. Caller says, that man hasn't a clue how people live in rural areas. I have a range and solid fuel. It cooks, bakes and heats the house. I will continue with that tradition. Caller said, my granny and granda lived to be 100 with open fires and smoke in the kitchen. My mum's in her 90s. My uncle is 93 and still five others still living. They'd be used to smoke. I use turf and I don't like oil. It's not nice heat in the house, so says the caller. Pardon me. Another caller says, I have a stove burning smokeless coal and logs. I also have oil. I am not going to stop using my stove. And if I want to put on my oil too, I would even put the two on together, so says a caller. Another caller says, good morning. And we spoke earlier about the hospital and a caller who had been waiting over 11 hours in A&E with a person that is terminally ill. And caller says, yes, Letterkenny Hospital is an absolute disgrace. We had experiences with our 82-year-old mother in agony and sent home with painkillers after 12 hours. The management has to be questioned. They've no backbone to fight for the hospital. They blame COVID all the time. How convenient. And also on the protests in Dublin, good on them. More needed when you see that they actually got a reaction. Bravo, says a caller. And a comment on allergies. Caller says, my child has a severe nut allergy, has experienced anaphylaxis. It's very difficult to eat out in restaurants as they always say they have nuts everywhere and can't guarantee all food is nut-free. Very frustrating, especially for a child who ends up feeling left out and at times sits with nothing, especially when it comes to desserts. And that is a situation that sadly many people do find themselves in. Time on Highland Radio is 16 minutes past 11. Now, we are going to discuss defective blocks. You'll recall there was a conference at Letterkenny campus of the ATU last year where a number of visitors came over from the US, from Canada, to discuss defective blocks and the research taking place on that issue, both nationally, locally and internationally. One of the organisers of that was Dr. Eileen Doherty, and recently Dr. Eileen and Professor Paul Dunlop travelled to Quebec City and Trois-Rivières in Canada as part of the Ulster University Research Impact and Innovations Team programme. And they were obviously deeply involved in organising the conference in Letterkenny as well. And Eileen joins us on Zoom along with Joe Morgan, to whom we'll be going in a moment, because Joe has an interesting piece of news that he's going to share with us with regards to European interest in the defective block issue. We're going to go to Joe in a moment, but first we're going to go to Eileen. Dr. Eileen Doherty, good morning. Eileen, in terms of the trip to Canada, I suppose every trip like this is going to be a major learning trip. How much did you and Paul learn on this particular trip that you made?
Okay, so the purpose of the trip was two-pronged, I suppose. From Paul's point of view, Paul is a geologist, so Paul was there to further look at the research that's been undertaken in Laval University, as they are members of, they are part of the consortium for the GSIE research project in Ireland. So they are researching the cause of defective blocks, collapse, I suppose, and that research will contribute to the review of the IS-465 protocol. So that was one of the key objectives that Professor Dunlop particularly had. Now, I went along with a different intention. I mean, my research background is in business and also looking at the societal impact of let's call it the micro defective blocks crisis. So really interested, and I met with a number of key researchers, including the former Chancellor of Laval University, who had lengthy discussions about the impact on society that they found in Canada. For example, they have a very similar issue there near Laval, and also then the possible research collaboration that we could do here. Now, in addition to that, I also, myself and Paul, also met with the coalition in the Trois-Rivières, which is the region between Montreal and Quebec City where the actual issue has found itself, really. And we met, they're equivalent to the Mike Action Group in Canada, and we discussed at length with them their experience of the issue, how the Canadian government have reacted to the issue, how expediently they have reacted to fixing their homes. Now, there was a massive amount of similarities, but there was also stark differences, and particularly the speed at which the Canadian government have fixed these people's homes. So huge amount of learning, and we hopefully will bring both the Chancellor, former Chancellor, which is Professor Pigeon, and the Coalition to the Northwest now in the new year. So very, very useful and very constructive.
Should officials from Dara O'Brien's department be going over there? Because if the Canadian government have managed to react in a way that was quicker and more expedient, you know, what we're hearing time and again from campaigners is every time it seems there's a move forward, officials just heap bureaucracy upon bureaucracy upon bureaucracy and slow the process up. We're hearing that from MAG. We're hearing it from Martin McDermott, who's chair of Donegal County Council's own defective block committee, and they're the people ultimately who are in fact administering the scheme locally. So it seems that maybe there's a lot to be learned. There's a lot to be learned geologically. There's a lot to be learned academically. But it seems there's a lot to be learned politically as well.
There absolutely is. I mean, in 2021, when I was a member of the working group, one of the things I asked the other working group members who were the Department of Housing representatives was to connect with the people we had met in the States in 2019 to better understand the causes of this issue. Now, they did not act. And unfortunately, we found that to be the case the last number of years, that even though we have informed them of learnings and things that would be of value to this campaign, ultimately, it seems to always come back to us as campaigners, to us as researchers, homeowners, on the ground. So it has to really work from the bottom up. That's very disappointing. But unfortunately, that's the case. I mean, when you think about this as the biggest redress scheme in the history of the Irish state, the billions that it's going to cost the Irish taxpayer, and the fact that the Irish government have done no research into the impact on society. How is this impacting the North West? How is it impacting children's education? How is it impacting commercial properties? How can property, the housing market here? Now, we obviously are talking about Donegal, but then when you consider there are 14 counties, one in Northern Ireland and 13 in the Republic of Ireland, they're also affected. The fact that they have completely ignored the need to actually undertake research in this area, aside from the scientific stuff, this stuff is incredibly important. We need to understand how it's going to impact all of us in society, how it's impacting our community, all of those kind of things. So, unfortunately, it seems to be that we are the ones that have to take a lead in this. It doesn't seem to come naturally from the Irish government, which is very disappointing.
We referenced the conference that took place in Letterkenny last year that you were closely involved in organising, yes, and presenting at. And there was some of that research conducted locally in terms of the impact of defective blocks on children and young people in schools, the effect on their education. A very, very interesting and stark presentation made to that conference. Since then, do you get the impression anyone in government listened?
Well, yes. As you say, I organised this, the societal impact aspect of the conference. So I had lots of speakers there. So we had everybody from IDP to Angeline Ruddy, who's a former deputy at Mowell College. And, you know, there are lots of people who talked about the impact on children's education. Again, absolutely horrifying to hear some of the actual evidence that they presented. But I don't know that anybody listened. I mean, but funnily enough, when I went to Canada and I met with Professor Michel Pigeon, he actually referenced that particular speech that presentation at the conference in Letterkenny last year. He was very moved by the impact on children's education and those kind of things and the trauma that's been caused. Now, when you talk about the mental health impacts in general, I mean, just worth noting that I went on Friday to Coleraine University with my colleague, Dr. Karen Kirby, who's a senior lecturer in psychology at Ulster University, to meet with the PhD student who's now starting and embarking on a 3-year PhD study of the impact of the mica crisis on mental health in the Northwest region. It's absolutely fantastic. The reason I went was because Karen is leading the research, but myself and Paul are co-supervisors on the project. So again, really brilliant to see that there's research being kicked off. This is really valuable, credible research has been undertaken. But again, unfortunately, this has had to be done from the bottom up. And it's a pity that we don't see a bit more, organically from the government's perspective. They just don't seem to be engaged in terms of the absolute need for this.
And in terms of what you saw in Canada, do you get the impression that more did come proactively from government, that it was from the top down, that there is an interest being taken at government level, that they don't have to be dragged kicking and screaming every step of the way, as appears to be the case here? Everything on the, if I'm correct, everything that's happened from the point of view of the Irish government appears to have been reactionary. But there is very little evidence of anything proactive coming from Dublin.
Well, unfortunately, in many cases, it hasn't even been reactionary. I mean, that's one of the things that came up in the 2017 report, that they weren't reactive. They absolutely did not at all react. Sometimes even when we actually went to them, and it took them a long time to even acknowledge the issue. It's hard to say the difference in how the Canadian government reacted, but all I can say is that from what we're told, the speed at which they got these homes fixed is phenomenal. I mean, we're talking 4,000 to 8,000 homes, and the numbers are there's different regions in Canada, but thousands and thousands of homes have been remediated. Their issue came forward about 2009, So only a number of years before us, and they seem to have managed to get a system in place that is working. You know, we asked them at length what the process was from, say, in Canada, if they find that they had cracks in their basement, which is what it is there, until their homes are fixed. And we absolutely were so shocked to find out in some cases that from they initially found the cracks until their homes were fixed, we're talking a couple of months. Now, we need to work out how it is that they have managed to implement a process that's so efficient, and compare that to the process that we have here. Now, I understand that the basements are what need replaced there. They don't need to replace their whole homes. But in any case, the process is incredibly efficient. And we need to look at that and say, well, how can we have made our process so complicated that it is impossible for many families to get through this?
Eileen, stay with us if you would. I want to go to Joe Morgan, who is a former member of MAG and also a member of the government working group on defective blocks that you yourself, Eileen, sat on as well. Joe, you were involved in a trip to Europe that took place at the start of the summer, and that's now being reciprocated, and there's a team from Europe about to come to Donegal, Joe.
Yes, Donal, we have a delegation coming from the EU Parliament at the end of October. They're due to arrive on the 30th. And just to put that meeting in context, it really kicked off from a presentation that was made to the EU Parliament Petitions Committee, as it's known, back in December 2021. A group of homeowners from Donegal and Mayo went to the EU Parliament. Myself and Anne Owens presented to the committee, and subsequent to that, the committee themselves have decided through a very competitive voting process that they would come to Donegal to see the defective block crisis for themselves. And I have to say, we're very, very grateful to them. It's not a given that they would have come. It's a very competitive landscape relative to other issues within the EU bloc that were also for consideration. So we are extremely lucky to have them coming over, and we will be utilising that visit to the best of our ability to highlight significant flaws in terms of market surveillance in this country around construction.
Is it your hope that ultimately what we'll see coming from Europe is a very strong advice, if not absolute direction, to government to act in a certain way with regards to defective blocks, both in terms of ensuring that those affected at the moment are remediated, but more importantly, and, you know, vitally, to ensure that this never happens again?
Yeah, absolutely, Donal. I mean, to be quite frank with you, not having it happen again, I think, is maybe even suggesting that we're further forward than we actually are, because it hasn't stopped happening. That's the problem. It still is continuing today. We're aware of defective blocks being manufactured in Donegal right up to current day. So yes, the objective is primarily to get directive from Europe, because we've been trying and engaging extensively with local and national authorities here in order to ensure that this would stop and that it won't affect our children and their generation as they go to about building their own homes. So we do want ultimately the goal is to get direct influence from the EU to make that happen. This particular trip is a fact-finding mission. So the EU Parliament will come over. They're going to see it for themselves. They have put out invites to the petitioners who raised the petitions with them originally back in December 2021. So they're going to be meeting with them and some campaign groups too. And importantly, they'll be meeting with local authority figures in Donegal and also national authorities in Dublin. So it's important that we as homeowners who have been living this are given the opportunity, and we will be given the opportunity ahead of the local and national authority meetings to frame our experience and what we're going through in terms of our engagement with the scheme to try and remediate our own homes and our frustration with the fact that this crisis continues today.
You mentioned frustration, and that was quite evident when you and your family just spoke to Greg not all that long ago. We heard on Friday that following discussions between the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland and a number of Oireachtas members, that the BPFI are going to make a proposal along with three of the banks in terms of providing working capital to homeowners. Now, they wouldn't say what the proposal would be, nor would they say what the terms of the proposal would be. Are they talking interest-free loans? Are they talking grants? We haven't got the details yet. Does that give you any hope of movement, or is this just a stalling tactic?
Yeah, I haven't been directly involved, and I have to, you know, say or give a huge gratitude to the banking and insurance redress focus group. They've done tremendous heavy lifting in terms of just getting the financial institutions and the central bank to engage, and it has been their work and not the work of other individuals that maybe has been suggested of late. Look, I think we have to be hopeful, Donal. The BPFI and the central bank have met the redress focus group. That's positive, right? They're talking about unique, very focused products specific for this crisis. So look, I remain hopeful. We have to wait, obviously, to see what they come out with. And I'm led to believe they are due to make some form of a statement, maybe as early as this week, relative to what they might look like. And look, we look forward to the content of that statement.
In terms of your own situation, Joe, you spoke to Greg and you were basically in limbo waiting. Are you still waiting? Are you any further forward since then?
Yeah, we're in the same position. I have maintained, as I have done since March this year, when we were given indications that things were moving, I've maintained contact with local authority figures. As I understand it, there was some progress. Eileen maybe can speak to this in more detail than me, but I believe there was some communication around what the council are calling Category 1A and 1B last week. I'm not in that category. I'm Category 3, and I haven't heard anything to date. I'm led to believe, and again, I've heard a number of weeks in the past, but I'm led to believe there may be some movement on Category 2s and 3s this week. But as of right now, Donald, to answer your question, nothing has moved for me, myself personally.
Eileen, Dr. Eileen Doherty, going back to yourself, are you in a position to shed any light on what movement we have in Categories 1 and 2?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience, and the position I'm in is that we have been very thankfully moved back under our own house. Our house was demolished and rebuilt, and I have to say that that a large thanks is to my family who are in construction, who really helped me and supported me getting to the stage. But really got a correspondence finally from Donegal County Council last week. And just to put it in context, I spoke to Donegal County Council at the end of June, just as I was moving back into the house. Significant amount of monies that are due to suppliers. And we were promised at that time it would be a couple of weeks. So we're now 3 months later. We still owe significant monies to suppliers to get, you know, for us given back in. And we got another email on Thursday with another list of things that we need to send. So it's incredibly frustrating. I don't think they have any understanding of the pressures that families are under. Irrespective of the stage we're at, there are significant pressures. So good to see that a correspondence has come out. Very disappointed to see that it's taken so long. Can't really understand why it's been taking so long. And people like Joe, who are absolutely in need to be communicated with, it just really begs belief that this has just been dragging on for so long.
And the reality is there are a lot of people out there who are not in a position to put the money up front themselves to get things paid for and then claim it back. And that's maybe where this focused product that will hopefully come from these BPFI central bank discussions will come, that will hopefully give people the wherewithal to get the initial capital to actually get the work done while they're waiting to get the money to get it paid back. Because, I mean, it seems interminable the wait to actually get those funds from the council. And, you know, your story does actually sort of really show that and exemplify that. There are a lot of people aren't in a position to even get as far as you've got.
Oh, absolutely. And we realise that and recognise it every day. I mean, I've been campaigning for a long time, but, you know, we're really, really lucky. We realise it every day that we're really lucky to be at this stage, but really recognise that without the fact that I have family in construction, we wouldn't have been able to do this. We wouldn't have been able to afford it. The prices that are coming out from builders and the supply chain are just extraordinary. Another issue that I plan to look at over the next number of months is look at how we can work on getting those costs down for families. Another reason this research is really important. But yes, realise that a lot of people just can't even get to the stage, and that this process just needs to be streamlined, and it's as simple as that. And I suppose to finish that off, I've actually asked Donegal County Council for a bit of research funding, seed funding, which they've given me through University of Ulster, and I plan to submit a report to them next month on looking at how we can address some of the issues that are facing the scheme, in particular the issues with costing and around the supply chain. So, you know, that businesses are facing extreme pressures because of the fact that these FAPE funds have to be claimed back, and commercial property owners who are actually affected themselves. So there's a huge amount of research that needs to be done, and hopefully ultimately it will feed back into the actual scheme itself and make it more workable for families as well as commercial properties. So again, watch this space and we'll keep you updated on that too, Donal.
Dr. Eileen Doherty, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And indeed, Joe Morgan, thank you as well. That European Parliament delegation coming to Donegal on the 30th of October. And I'm sure, Joe, you'll be taking the opportunity to show them some of the houses around the county and elsewhere. And they'll leave in no doubt as to the severity of the situation.
Yeah, Donal, we have a couple of properties already teed up, and we're actually going to include, if I can get final approval, a local commercial property in Letterkenny, which is a community-based building, providing crash facilities, and basically has no opportunity to seek any type of redress or recourse relative to the fact that that building is, if not already, is unsafe to be in. So yeah, look, they will be. The European delegation will be in no doubt in terms of the crisis that's facing Donegal and, you know, half of the counties at this stage in Ireland. And just quickly, Donald, the outcome, the final outcome, which is hugely important to this, will be a very robust report, which the EU Parliament are required to produce, which will go to the EU Commission. And we will be following that ourselves as homeowners with an EU complaint, which will also be paralleled by a complaint which is going in by Coleman Legal. Our intent is that those three independent channels, all addressing the same issue going to the EU Commission, will be enough to influence the EU Commission's decision to engage with our government to make sure, one, the scheme and its administration is fixed, and two, that our kids don't find themselves where we are today.
And as we've heard from Eileen, it does seem it can be done at government level. They seem to be doing it right in Canada. Let's hope that something can be learned from that and that finally we can see it being done right here. For the moment, Dr. Eileen Doherty, Joe Morgan, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you. Total.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
91 25,000 for your calls. 0035 374 91 25,000 if you're outside of the dialing area. You can text us on 086 60 25,000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. We're at Highland Hub on Facebook. We're at Highland Radio on Twitter or X, call it what you will. And also we are available on other social media channels, and our YouTube channel is Highland Radio Ireland, where you can watch the show on the screen, as it were, and you can watch it on our Facebook pages as well. And it's a really good idea to do that right now, because I'm delighted to say we are joined on Zoom by the wonderful Mr. Francis Brennan. Always great to talk to Francis. Always gives great value when he's on a programme like this. Francis, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. Are you windswept up there like we are down here?
We're not too bad today, actually. We were very windswept over the weekend. I'm looking out the window and the leaves are moving a bit on the trees, but it's not too serious.
We have a dry morning here, but we had a terrible weekend. But anyway, we got on with it like always.
It's grand, as we always do. Francis, you turned 70 this year. And
Today is the day.
Well, in that case, a very happy birthday. I didn't realise today was your actual 70th.
25th of September.
Well, in that case, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Francis. Happy birthday to you. I thought it was earlier in the year, actually. I do beg your pardon. And when you started contemplating the impending 70th, and I'm funny, I sort of have similar thoughts, because I'm, shall we say, give or take, I'm 10 years younger than you. And I've been having those thoughts too, because I'll be soon saying goodbye to me five. And yes, well, you start thinking about age and you start reflecting on where you are and what you're doing. Some people go out and buy sports cars. Some people have midlife crises. You decided to go out and write a book about it.
Uh-huh. Well, I was hanging my hat on the fact that I was 70 today, I suppose. And just towards the back end of the dynamic, I was talking to Gil, my publishers, and we decided we'd go for a book in this area. All right. So if you're going to be coming into the 60s now and on into your 70s, it's ideal for you, Donal, because it covers all aspects of leading up to retirement and finance and housing and keeping friends and keeping in touch with people and new hobbies or whatever. So it covers a lot of stuff in that area.
Oh, absolutely. I do. I have a copy of the book in my hand, and in my hand it is going to stay, and it'll be read cover to cover many times, I suspect. And it's an interesting one, because a lot of people always say, oh, I'm getting so old. I mean, I've a daughter who had a significant birthday this year, and I swear she was more worried about the significant birthday than I am about mine, which I found interesting.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the front cover of the book, age is just a number. Yeah. She should have known that when she was only 21 or whatever, or 40 or whatever age she was. I don't know exactly.
She's half my age, shall we say. and we'll say no more than that.
She's years to go, yes.
Oh, of course she is, yeah.
No worries. And when she looks back, presumably she'll be grateful for all that you did for her over the years, that she'll remember those years as well. But retirement is something that, you know, it is a change in people's lives very much. And you end up in a situation where you've worked probably in an office or a radio station or a petrol station or whatever, where you have friends all the time. And then all of a sudden you leave that job and maybe perhaps your social circle more than halves. And you should be aware of that and try and have things lined up that for when you move from your job to retirement, you're not left alone at home on a Monday morning looking at the four walls and a pouring rain and you're thinking, poor me. There is no need for that, because what you need to do prior to retiring is to get out there and get involved in, listen, knitting clubs, book clubs, bicycle clubs, whatever it might be, golf clubs, anything at all. Get into things that will keep you busy when the time comes and give you a focus for a Thursday night to go there or a Wednesday afternoon to go there. That is very, very important.
Well, I know Gráinne Hines and Mary Jo Hannon and others would never forgive me if I didn't mention that we do have a very prolific and active retirement group here in this particular region. And they are very busy and they seem to be off gallivanting all the time. If they're not listening, it's because they're off on a bus trip somewhere. And as you say, it's very important. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people who have retired, and what I hear from a lot of them is that they're a lot more busy after they retire than they ever were when they were working. And that's, you know, a testament to, I suppose, what happens when you take control of your own life and start doing what you want to do.
Exactly. Instead of going 9 to 5, you have 9 till 12 and you can go to the cinema at night, or you can go to the cinema at 11 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or whatever you want to do. You become actually freer because you can pick the times that you want to be occupied by doing the other things that we mentioned earlier.
Relationships is an interesting one, and I'm sure that there's reference to this in the book. And I remember studying sociology years ago, and one of the points that was made about retirement when I looked at it as part of a course I was doing, is the point was made that very often you'll get a couple who are married and they can be married for 30, 40 years, and either they both work or one works and one is in the home, but they have their own dynamics. And as you say, they have their own friends, they have their own routines. And suddenly you can come up with a situation where having spent 30 to 40 years together in the same house, happily married, but with their own routines and with their own lives, suddenly these two people are together.
Yes.
On their own. And there can be, shall we say, friction. Important to guard against that.
Well, it's important that the couple have, outside of the couple, that they have other things, be it a golf course for him, maybe a book club for her. And they need to work on those things. Don't just happen. You have to work on them. And you have to make a commitment to go 8 o'clock every Wednesday night to the book club or to play golf at 10 o'clock in the morning, wherever it might be. So it's important that you have, as I said earlier, things outside the home that keep you busy when the time comes. Now, my own brother-in-law just retired last year in Dublin. He's an electrical engineer. And he had like 5 days at home and nearly went out of his mind. But luckily, some gentleman who in that knew him over the years, he works 2 days a week now and he can pick any 2 days he wants, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. And my sister said, thanks be to God, it's the best thing that ever happened that he has 2 days work in his retirement every week, because it was just too much for him. You know, he is a good golfer and he plays quite a bit, but it was just he was at home too much. Yeah. So my sister was very happy that he got a little chance to step out. And I was in Dublin last week and I met him and he's absolutely delighted with the present situation. So there's something that he didn't ever expect to happen, but it did happen.
Yeah. The other option you have, of course, and my dream, and I say this to everybody, my idea of a perfect retirement is sitting down with the Sunday papers and you open up and you look and you see an advert for a trip, be it a cruise or be it a guided bus trip or whatever. Okay, and it's like, you know, special offer Tuscany 2 weeks time for a week or whatever. And the opportunity to be able to go, let's do that. That you have that opportunity to say, right, I'm going to jump on the last minute offers and go travelling. And I suppose the advice to people would be, look, if you have the opportunity, grab it and do it.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid, just go, because you have to take some bigger steps when you're retired than you might have done. You were always constricted by your 9 to 5 Monday to Friday job before. You couldn't go on those trips. Now you're as free as a thing. And provided you have taken care of your pension, Donal, which is an important aspect of the book. I've quite a bit on that in there, that people have to, you know, understand that pensions are an important part of life and that you have a few bob extra when you retire from the job to do those sort of Tuscany trips, as you call them, on the bus on Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
Well, the one sensible thing I did was I took out a private pension when I was 29. So that's the one sensible thing I did in my life.
I did mine at 27, so we weren't too far apart.
Yeah. So as the man said, there's something there. There'll be enough to be able to afford a flight anyway, which is something. Francis, in terms of yourself, I mean, you know, you've written this book. You're well known as a writer, as a commentator. I mean, how important was it for you to crystallize your thoughts and get all your thoughts onto paper when you were, you know, contemplating your own impending 70th? When you were putting the book together, I mean, you know, it's an interesting, I suppose, from your point of view, it's a natural thing to do, given that you're a communicator and a writer anyway.
Yeah, well, when I sat down with the book, I thought, what do I need to put into it? Information, simply explained. I think that's important because I always explain things very simply. And I also throw in a funny story that relates to the situation that we might be discussing in the book. So I went through it about what sort of chapters would be laid. Now, there are two sections in the book, one on finance and one on mindfulness and that type of thing. And I got professional help with those because I wouldn't be qualified other than what I know myself, as Fella says. So I was, Dr. Mark Rowe helped me there with that. And that he sort of laid out what your mind should be doing from the age of 65, 70 onwards. So I actually was thankful to them that they were there to help me with that. But I laid it out in a very practical, simple way, very readable and easy for people to understand.
And your own history, obviously, in the hotel, not to mention your frequent TV appearances and so on. I mean, you're known as one of the ultimate hospitality experts, gregarious, outgoing. And, you know, if anyone was looking for, I suppose, advice on holiday and getting out there, you're the perfect person to go to. I really enjoyed your cruising show that you did, actually, at one point. I really enjoyed that one.
That's in the Grand Tours series as such. Like we've done Grand Tours to where now? India, Vietnam, South Africa and the European continent. They're very enjoyable. The thing about that is that it's all a surprise, even for me. Like people might think that I'm aware of everybody before they get. I only meet the people at the airport. I have never met them before. I know nothing about them.
Yeah.
So it's something we need to pull out their stories and get on with it. And we haven't done any of those now since pandemic time because RT wouldn't be keen on putting 18 people on a bus and one of them getting COVID and we're all stuck in Vietnam for 2 weeks. That wouldn't go down great. Mm. So right away from the travel shows. We are starting tomorrow filming for next year for At Your Service. So we're back on the road. We're filming. We have four shows lined up now, filming the next 6 weeks, a good bit of it. And then we leave them alone for the winter. We go back to them in the spring. So that'll be for autumn next year. So we have, like people say, what would you be doing when you're retired? I won't be idle. I'll have things going on at all times.
Francis, as ever, it's an absolute pleasure to speak to you. I look forward to devouring the book, and maybe someday down the road we'll meet and I'll be able to thank you for giving all the advice to me that I'll be using in the years to come. For the moment, Francis, you're a gentleman. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Francis Brennan there. And the book is called Age is Just a Number. If you happen to be watching on our social media, I'll just hold the book. That's what it looks like. Age is Just a Number by Francis Brennan. And some very interesting reading there. Now, caller says, my heart goes out to that poor oncology patient who is waiting for a bed 24 hours. It is a total disgrace and many alongside them. It's not acceptable and something needs to be done. Earlier, caller, we got a letter actually calling, talking about the fact that a lot of buildings in Letterkenny were looking a little bit dilapidated and in need perhaps of a lick of paint. And just want to let you know that Donegal County Council is hosting information events across the county to provide information on the supports available to refurbish vacant and derelict properties. There are some grants there. There's the Vacant Property Refurbishment Grant Scheme, and there's the Repair and Lease Scheme with supports available for units, and anyone who wishes to avail of such supports can do so. And the nights are taking place today, actually, Monday the 25th at GTech in Carrigart from 11 to 2. Letterkenny Public Services Centre this evening from 5 to 8. Tomorrow, then, there's an evening event in the Massiness Hall in Creasla. No, it's not evening, sorry, I beg your pardon. It's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Massiness Hall in Creasla. And then Milford Public Services Centre from 3 to 7. And the events will run right through then other areas until October the 5th. Now, not a lot of time left, but I really do want to get to this next piece because there is a very, very interesting looking programme starting on RTE TV this week. I read the blurb and thought, this is for me. Supported by the Donegal Film Office, Obituary is a new dark comedy series set around a small town newspaper. It was shot between Market Street Lawn Park and St Anne's Cemetery in Ballyshannon and also at Roy in Bundoran. The writer is Ray Lawler and he joins us on Zoom. Ray, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
I am very well indeed. Ray, Obituary, and I have to say, I will say this up front, I think I've read some of your work before. I'm a huge fan of Colin Bateman, Christopher Brookmeyer. They'd be among my favourite authors. This looks right up my street in terms of the sort of comedy I like to engage in.
Yeah, dark, weird, and I suppose what we're really going for is original, you know, something that hasn't been on Irish TV before. That's how we're trying to sell ourselves. Well, let's see, can we pull it off? But yeah, something different, something weird, and something fun.
The basic story is there's an obituary writer for a local newspaper in a small town, and we know this is filmed in Ballyshannon and Bundoran. It's an obituary writer in a local newspaper who is suddenly told, sorry, you're not on salary anymore, you are now going to be paid per piece. So our obituary writer is an enterprising obituary writer and decides that she needs a steady supply of prominent local people to be writing obituaries about. And how does one guarantee a regular demand for obituaries? One creates the need.
Yes, exactly. I know that's the whole, I suppose we call that the engine of the story, you know. When I was pitching it, I would always say there's always more people to kill. She kills people and she gets to write about them. And I suppose what's unusual about our serial killer, she gets to go and talk to the families after she has maybe murdered them to do a little bit of research or to write their obituaries, to sympathize with them. So it's kind of got that... that weirdness of you're hanging around after you kill someone. But yeah, that's what she does. First one is a little bit of an accident, but once she gets into the swing of things, she realises she's really good at it.
However, it doesn't go... We won't give away too much. Well, we can't because I don't know any more really myself, but we do know that, it doesn't go unnoticed and just leave it at that.
It doesn't. I mean, there is no such thing as a perfect crime and it doesn't go unnoticed. And into her life comes a dashing new crime correspondent for the paper. And of course, what he wants more than anything is a big story. And maybe there's one sitting right under his nose.
Obituary is the TV series. It starts this week, RTE1 on... It's tomorrow night, actually, 10:15 tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night, 10:15 on RTE1. And all the episodes are available on the player, I think, the following day.
And it's a six-part series, as we said, shot in Ballyshannon, written by yourself. Executive producer is Paddy Hayes. And among those taking part, the actors are Siobhan Cullen, Michael Smiley, we have Ronan Rafferty, and we also have John Hayes directing. He also did Dublin Murders and Bancroft. So there's a lot of heavy hitters taking place in this. Ray, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really look forward to this. Obituary is... the series, it's an initial six-parter. Is this potentially something you'd like to see maybe picked up by Netflix or one of the others and potentially go further internationally?
Yeah, it's actually made by Hulu in America, so it's going to be premiering in November or December on their streamer the States. So they've been great. They've put in some of the cash as well. So we had a great time in Donegal. It was amazing. So we really like to come back and do it all again.
Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. This has been the 9 till Noon Show on Highland Radio. Thank you to you for listening. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you to Carolyn Orr, who directed and produced and also looked after the phones outside. Most importantly, thanks to you, the listeners, and everyone who made contact with us this morning. We're back again tomorrow morning at 9. But for now, for myself, Donal Kavanagh, have a very good day.